Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. How Pennsylvania's congressional district maps are drawn so they don't favor one party's candidates over another has been a major issue over the past year. When the state Supreme Court ruled Pennsylvania's districts were unconstitutional last year, rejected new districts submitted by the legislature, and eventually adopted maps of their own, it opened the door for many to weigh in. Draw the Lines PA is a competition that took it one step further and gave Pennsylvanians the opportunity to draw their own maps. Winners have been announced, and there's more to come. Joining us today to talk about gerrymandering, redistricting, and especially the contest, Draw the Lines PA Managing Director David Thornburg. Mr. Thornburg is also CEO and President of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70. David Thornburg, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
Also, Chris Satullo, he's Draw the Lines PA Project Director. Chris, always good to talk to you.
Same here, Scott.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. You know, David Thornburg, we're kind of going to be making light of this because it is a competition. It is, you know, something to for Pennsylvanians to have some fun with. But obviously, we're talking about a very serious issue when we're talking about how Pennsylvania's congressional district maps were drawn, gerrymandering. And I should also add that you're part of the governor's commission on special commission on redistricting reform. So if you would, kind of take us backwards for those who may not be familiar, how the competition, how you came up with the idea and the whole idea behind it.
Sure. Glad to. I think this evolved from a conversation that Chris and I had maybe October of 16, as the interest in redistricting started to grow. And it grew on an experience that Chris had when he was at WHYY, staging a similar competition for people, in that case, around Philadelphia's Councilmanic District. And, you know, I think it rests on the principle that there's nothing like literally getting your hands on the controls and driving, as it were, to get a feel for what this issue is all about and how it affects Pennsylvanians and how it really relates to the core fundamentals of representation in our democracy. So, you know, as these things do, it starts with an idea, and then you start to try to figure out how to make it happen. And we're thrilled that we've got it to the point where we've got thousands of Pennsylvanians who have hands-on working knowledge through this competition about how districts are drawn and ultimately how they could be drawn better.
And Chris Tullo, the tools are there as well. I mean, this isn't like, obviously there was some research behind it that those who participated would have to do to follow some guidelines to come up with districts that, I don't know whether I'd say constitutional, but at least would meet some of those guidelines, but also be fair as far as population distribution and not favoring one party over another. So that had to make it a little bit easier, too, that there is technology today that anyone on the street can almost do this.
Yeah, Scott, there's a really critical point there that, you know, for most of the history of the United States, elected officials have drawn those lines that determined whether, you know, what kind of chance they had to get reelected. But we're in a new moment in American history because of digital technology. And the first use of the digital technology was essentially to take gerrymandering nuclear. And politicians used it to draw these diabolically precise and weird wandering lines to benefit themselves. But that same technology can be flipped around and put in the hands of voters and ordinary people becomes a tremendously powerful tool to reform the process. So, you know, we built a tool that we call District Builder. You can find it on our website, Draw the Lines PA. Just click on the gold button that says Draw Map, and you're there. And it has all the census data and all the political data you need to draw a valid constitutional congressional map of Pennsylvania. And as you're drawing your lines, it's giving you constant feedback on how you're doing across several metrics, you know, which you mentioned. Compactness, population equivalence, competitiveness, and others. And if you really want to nerd out and dig deep, you can dig into the census data and look at how your district turns out for all kinds of demographic and political data.
So let me ask a serious question. I mean, is this tool something that if the state legislature, because that still is the law right now, wants to redraw their districts after the 2020 census, that they could use a tool like that or, you know, at least something that's similar?
Well, Chris pointed out.
Actually, the key thing, Scott, is they do use a tool like that, but they've used an extremely expensive tool, usually one called Maptitude, and they use it behind closed doors. The difference here is we've got an open source free tool that anybody can use to get a sense of the experience. Now, to do it for real and get a completely valid constitutional map, we have to refine the tool and make it a little more complicated. We sort of made a choice to set up the challenge in a way that people could actually finish it without losing their minds. But your fundamental point is right. This technology has gotten to the point where it can be available to every Pennsylvanian who wants to have a voice and contribute to the discussion the next time these maps are drawn in 2021.
David, what were you going to say?
Well, Scott, I was just going to point out that, you know, A, to reaffirm what Chris said, but also, you know, the law right now could change, but the law right now says it is the job of the General Assembly to draw these maps. But at the very, very least, this new democratized tool gives constituents the ability to talk intelligently and, I hope, persuasively to their representatives about ultimately how they'd like to be represented. So I think in the best of all worlds, we can have a much more robust, open, transparent conversation to replace something that has been secretive and driven by operatives and with only a sense that, you know, partisan objectives were being pursued.
I want to talk about some of the things you found with the contest in just a moment, but I do want to follow up on that. And, you know, we've actually talked about this before, but I think it's worth repeating the question. You know, I've said this on the air many times that this is an issue that has become a major issue, come to the forefront for many Pennsylvanians, many Americans, many voters in the last couple years. And the question I'm curious about is, will voters ask candidates about where they stand on redistricting? I mean, what kind of question would you even suggest? So there's two questions there. Will they ask candidates about it? Will it be that kind of, will be important enough for voters to ask candidates about it? And how should they ask the question?
Well, I think we're past that point. I think voters already have started asking candidates and their elected incumbents how they come out on this issue. And, you know, I think the easiest question is to ask your representative, you know, do you favor the current process or do you favor a change that would open up the process, allow for more independent, nonpartisan participation? And, you know, that's the starting point for the conversation, which is, again, this competition gives people, I think, the confidence and the sense of ownership of the process that we've never been able to achieve before.
But, David, I'm going to kind of push back in a cynical kind of way in that it's very easy for a candidate to say, oh, yes, I favor this kind of reform. But the reality is, once they're elected, leadership kind of holds the key to what happens with the districts being redrawn. How do you deal with that?
Well, you pointed out earlier, this issue has taken off in a way that nobody ever really anticipated. I mean, 5 years ago, if you started talking about gerrymandering and districting, you would put people to sleep. But remarkably, thousands of Pennsylvanians have become engaged around this issue. And once they do, and once they're equipped with the tools like we've been able to to give them, I think it raises the bar, and it is something that candidates and incumbents have to talk openly about.
Chris,
you know, Scott,
go ahead. What were you going to say?
Jump in there. You've been around Harrisburg a long time, Scott. You know, in Pennsylvania, we do everything the hard way.
Yeah.
So you're right. This is an uphill climb. It's just important for people to realize that around the country, major, major things have been happening around this issue. And last year, in Utah, in Missouri, in Ohio, in Colorado, in Michigan, voters through initiative and referendum made dramatic, dramatic changes in how election districts will be drawn going forward. And they got the kind of fierce resistance from the powers that be that you would expect. The key difference in all those states, there's some capacity for citizen-initiated change by referendum. We don't have that in Pennsylvania. So you're right. Any significant changes will have to be made by the very same people who are part of the problem. But I would point out that last year, the Fair Districts PA constitutional amendment got 110, I think it was, sponsors in the House, which technically is enough votes for it to pass. But as you pointed out, the leadership and the committee chair never let that vote, that bill come to a vote. So, yeah, there's a real problem in Pennsylvania that other states don't have, but that's, we don't look at that as a reason not to try. We look at that as a reason to try harder.
Oh, no. I didn't mean to suggest that either. I just, because I think that any time we can see something where we are engaging the voters, engaging the people of Pennsylvania, that is a good thing. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that's definitely what this contest did. Again, David, what you said was so true that a couple years ago, if you had said to someone, okay, we're going to have a contest that focuses on redistricting, they'd say, what? But
yeah. it's a small contest.
But it has become, but that brings up a point. How many people participated in the contest?
Well, Chris, you take that.
Well, yeah. So, as I mentioned, we have a tool called District Builder, which you sign on to. About 1,300 individuals or teams, probably covering about 1,600 people in total, signed on to try their hand at drawing maps. 2,700 maps were started. Now, it is hard to complete an entry to the Draw Lines contest because you have to have a constitutionally valid map and then write an essay or do a video or compose a rap song, as one person did, to talk about your map. But so we had 318 fully valid entries. I've looked at I'm one of two human beings who I think has looked at all 318 maps, and I can tell you, Scott, that at least 200, probably 250 of them just passed the eye test for common sense and fairness as being better than the congressional map we got out of Harrisburg in 2011.
Why do you say that? Why do they pass the eye test?
Well, if people are familiar with the issue, know the phrase goofy kicking Donald,
right,
which was the nickname given the crazy, wandering, jagged 7th District in the Philadelphia suburbs. I'm saying that, the bulk of the maps we got did not have any districts that sort of made your eyes pop and go, well, what is going on there? They were more compact. They seemed to follow geographical common sense, like, Wilkes-Barre goes with Scranton, Allentown goes with Bethlehem, Harrisburg goes with York, that kind of thing. And according to the hard metrics in terms of compactness, in terms of competitiveness, they were more compact and more competitive than that map was.
I want to talk more about the contest and some of the winners. And our area, our region here in central Pennsylvania is well represented. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the Draw the Lines PA competition that had Pennsylvanians drawing their own congressional maps, and it's turned out quite well. First attempt at it, and it seems like it was a very successful competition that maybe some state legislators could learn a few things from. Joining us today is David Thornburg, Draw the Lines PA Managing Director and CEO and President of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70. Mr. Thornburg is also Chair of Governor Wolf's Special Commission on Redistricting redistricting reform. Chris Satullo, Draw the Lines PA Project Director. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So you did have a number of winners. How many winners and divisions did you have where there were some winners crowned?
Well, we had three regions, cleverly named East, Central, and West.
That is clever.
And three age divisions, youth, higher ed, and adult. And we had a first and second place regional winner in each one of those divisions. So that added up to 18 with a couple of ties. There were 20 regional winners. Then that went to statewide judging, and we had a state champ and state runner-up in each age group, so six statewide winners.
So, and you know, just so everyone knows, this was not just where you're getting a trophy or anything. There is some cash tied to this as well, right?
Yeah, so if you won regions and state in your division, as Kyle Hines, a sophomore at State College High School, did, you win $5,000. So Kyle won $5,000.
Tell me about, because I know, I understand that you were very impressed, and he's a sophomore, right?
Yeah, David, you had a chance to talk to Kyle. Why don't you talk about your conversation?
Yeah, he's extraordinary, and we actually recorded a short interview with him that's on the Draw the Lines PA website, and you listen to this 16-year-old kid, who looks like a 16-year-old kid, but he's grasping the issue and the fairness and the sense of integrity that he was trying to bring to this issue, and that he understood quickly that there were trade-offs and he couldn't have everything that he wanted. And yet this persistence in this, you know, that he really just wanted to do something of value for his commonwealth and for his community, it's really extraordinary. It's inspiring. And I think throughout the competition at all, geographically and in terms of the age divisions, we saw that kind of instinct coming to the fore again and again.
DeLone Catholic High School, which is near Hanover here in our listening area, there were a couple teachers that did something unique with the contest, and this is great to see. Talk about that if you would, Chris.
Sure. So we did create a couple of curricula that high school teachers could use with the kids to teach them about elections, redistricting, you know, all the census, all sort of the things that revolve around the issue of election maps. With the idea that drawing a map on district builder would sort of be the capstone of the unit. And two teachers at DeLone, Julia Furman and John Forney, just took that and ran with it and had all of their kids sort of diving around our website doing different activities. And then they formed teams. And DeLone, there's another school, Roman Catholic in Philadelphia, that may be close to it. But DeLone itself, I think, produced more maps than any other place all over the state. I mean, it was just an extraordinary effort by that little Catholic school of Hanover. And the, the kids really got into it. They won one of the awards for our central region. And we're going to be going down there in a couple of weeks to sort of meet the students, give an award to DeLone Catholic for student engagement, and hopefully get some of their lawmakers there to just meet the kids and see what they did.
Well, you know, like I said, that's a great thing, because ultimately you are trying to engage people of Pennsylvania, but engaging young people as part of the educational process, I mean, that gets them on board with, as they become adults and become a voting age, that they realize this is an important issue and something they'll be looking out for.
Oh, absolutely.
We got Scott. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, and I mean, you put your finger on it, and I've had so many conversations with folks who are both hardcore conservatives and hardcore liberals who bemoan the loss of good old-fashioned civics education in our schools, and this is a 21st-century tool that we can use in the classroom with students of all ages to, again, put them in the driver's seat, give them a hands-on, not just a textbook knowledge of how the stuff's all supposed to work, but literally, you know, a hands-on you know, personal view and activity that helps them, encourages them to take ownership, which is so important these days.
Is there anything that surprised you about the results that you saw?
My two cents, the surprise was a happy surprise. I mean, we were little pins and needles as to how many people would actually take us up on the offer, and we were blown away that, you know, we had 1,500 people enter this process. And I give a lot of credit to Chris and the team. I mean, figuring out how to do this in a state as large and diverse as Pennsylvania is not an easy thing to do. So it's not like there weren't bumps along the way, but, you know, we were just thrilled with the outcome.
And, okay,
Scott,
so we...
There was a, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say there was a hopeful outcome that I wasn't sure we were going to get, but it came across in dozens of the essays that we read from people. They said they were surprised at how hard it was to do this. That a lot of people thought, well, you know, I can draw a map better than... But what they discovered was you come up, when you're moving the mouse around, with points where there's two things you value, like maybe compactness, but competitiveness of a district. And you can't have them both equally, and you have to make really difficult, thoughtful decisions. And so I was gratified that people said, boy, this really made me think, but in the end, it was fun and tremendously satisfying to, like, do the work and make those choices. So big part of the message we'd like to convey to our elected officials is that people in Pennsylvania, even as young as 14, are ready, willing, and able to do the hard work of helping you do a better job on these maps.
Mm. We talked about some of the high school winners and participants. What about college age and adults? Any difference between the three categories other than age?
Well, I would say that the college kids maybe had the most fun. The statewide winning team was a geography class from Penn State taught by Chris Fowler, who actually went out into the tailgating lots at Penn State football games to interview people, figuring the parking lot at a Penn State game is a great place to find Pennsylvania on a fall afternoon, and interviewed them and had them take a survey about what they wanted to see in an election map and use that as their guidelines. Then to actually draw their map, they met at Professor Fowler's house and ate tacos all deep into the night drawing their map and did a video of themselves doing it. So they had a lot of fun. The two winners in the adult division, Phil Pensley from suburban Philly and Blyden Potts from Shippensburg, went incredibly deep. Their maps are very, very subtle. Their metric scores are great. You know, the state of Pennsylvania could do far worse than hiring those two guys and Kyle Hines to do the next map.
Hmm. I think we also learned something, Chris, that the next time our legislators get together to do this, unless the law changes, tacos should be on the menu.
So, absolutely. I think tacos are the key. Taco power is the key to reforming democracy.
Go ahead, David.
Let me just point one thing out. I mean, we were very encouraged that when we made these awards at the Rotunda a couple weeks ago, we had about 20 to 25 legislators come out, obviously in support of their constituents. But, I mean, that's a reminder that, you know, all cynicism aside, which is hard to do, you know, there are folks in the legislature who really are trying to do the right thing for the right reasons. You know, we worked closely with Senator Fulmer's staff. We met recently with a new chair of the House State Government Committee, Garth Everett, from the Williamsport area. Representative Cutler. There are a lot of folks who are trying to figure this out and who see draw the lines as not a threat, but more as a sort of a welcome addition to the field. So I just want to make sure we make that point.
Oh, yeah. And Senator Fulmer was on our program just a few weeks ago talking about this. And I know Representative Everett is actually called into the program, so he listens from time to time. So, sure. Representative Everett, if you're listening today, a couple suggestions on some people who could help out when it comes to redrawing the lines in after the 2020 census comes out. So this is just the first step. Where do you go from here with it?
So we've already launched
our... roll forward, we've got another competition in the field right now that asks people to draw 17 congressional districts rather than 18 on the assumption that we'll lose one after the next census. So that closes May 20th. Put that on your calendar. Go to drawalliancepa.org to get started. And our intention is to keep doing this twice a year between now and the end of 2021. We'll give a shot at taking on the state Senate maps, the state House maps, which is, when you do 203 state House maps, that is clearly like platinum grade engagement. But I think we'll pick up, you know, the ball will keep rolling. We'll pick up a few thousand people every time we go through the competition. So there's quite a groundswell going on here.
You know, when we talk about the redistricting and gerrymandering, it almost always focuses on congressional maps. And you answered one of my questions, David, when you said that you'll get down to 17 because it's anticipated Pennsylvania will lose a congressional seat, a congressional district because of population loss. But the state districts for the state House and the state Senate, are those districts as gerrymandered as the congressional districts have been in the past?
Well, short answer, yes. I think it's just it's harder for people to grasp them because there's so many of them and because they're just, you know, more sort of obscure and in the background. But that's where, you know, this gets personal to the members of the House and the Senate because you move a line here or there, it literally could cost them their job and their livelihood. So that's where maybe the sort of fiercest battles take place. But we again think that that process deserves the same level of conversation and transparency and engagement that the congressional maps.
So, David, a more serious question, not that we haven't been talking about the serious things, but as chair of the governor's special commission on redistricting reform, can you give us any kind of update there? What's going on?
Well, we actually have our first organizational meeting today, we're going to be rolling out an ambitious schedule of nine meetings around the Commonwealth between now and early summer to hear from Pennsylvanians. That's, I should point out, 50% more than we were required to, so we're really serious about getting out there. And I also think, you know, the Draw the Lines has given us an enormous head start because from the get-go, we know there's 1,500 people out there who have engaged in this or conversant with the issues, and we are looking for ways to continue that engagement as we roll forward with the commission meetings. And Chris and I have had a number of conversations to try to figure out how that works.
Well, we will be talking to you again, I'm sure, about the steps as we go as we go ahead with this. David Thornburg, Draw the Lines PA Managing Director. He's also CEO, President of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70, and Chair of Governor Wolf's Special Commission on Redistricting Reform. Chris Cetullo, Draw the Lines PA Project Director. Gentlemen, always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm a little bit surprised here, but we're going to be doing something here that we've done for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or so. Always have a lot of fun with it. But should mention that coming up, before we get into the spelling bee, that you can see some of the shows that we're working on Smart Talk. And one of them is coming up on Monday, shortage of truck drivers. Also, starting next week, the 40th anniversary of the Three Mile Island accident. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Let's see. You can listen on Monday again to talk about what's coming up as far as trucker shortage, truck driver shortage, I should say. This coming weekend, WITF is hosting the Central Pennsylvania Spelling Bee. 35 young people will be vying to represent the region at the Scripps National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. In what's become a little bit of a tradition itself, Smart Talk has its own miniature spelling bee, and it lets everyone know the kind of words the spellers are asked to spell. Before we get into, I don't know if I call it a competition or not, Ruth Keim is our Spelling Bee coordinator. Ruth, always good to, I mean, always like seeing you around the building anyway, wearing your bee slippers.
Well, thanks, Scott.
And then when you come on here, you're a little more serious, even though I like to point out that you're not the pronouncer or you're not the in the actual competition.
I am not the pronouncer. I am just a coordinator. I work closely with the pronouncer and assistant pronouncer, but no, I do my best to pronounce these words, but please remember I am not a pronouncer.
All right, so just before we get started here, what can we expect here at WITF this weekend with the Spelling Bee?
I think this year you can expect a very exciting Spelling Bee. We've got some kids coming back. I have one speller who told me he has been studying for this for 10 months, and he is out to win it. And we have about 10, I believe, that are coming back from last year. So I think we're going to have a really tight competition.
And these kids are from grades 4 through 8?
We have no 4th graders this year, so these are 5th through 8th graders.
5th through 8th graders, okay. But 4th graders were eligible.
Yeah, we had, because of the snow makeup day, we had about 150 spellers here in January to take the written portion, and there were 4th graders involved in that. They just didn't make it onto the oral.
Maybe you should, just to provide some background, what are the steps that are taken to get to the point of the finals here and then beyond this?
Okay, well, first of all, we cover 10 counties in central Pennsylvania. The schools send me 1 to 4 spellers. They come for a written test, a 100-word written test in January. And from that, we take the top 30, well, no more than 36. This year we have 35. Mm-hmm. So they take a written test that is 50 spelling words and 50 vocabulary words.
Yeah, vocabulary became part of this just a few years ago.
Correct, yes. Now, we do not do vocabulary words at our oral B. But today I'm going to give you a couple of vocabulary words.
I always look forward to the vocabulary words. That's just me.
Okay.
But anyway, and so what's going on this weekend?
This weekend is the 35 spellers coming for the Grand Championship Oral Spelldown. We will give words until we have only one champion left, and he or she will represent us at the Scripps National Spelling Bee.
And that is when?
The end of May.
End of May. And by the way, you can see the Spelling Bee itself. It's on WITF TV Sunday.
Yes, we have 3 of them, actually. Sunday from 6 to 8, Wednesday. Friday for the schools, we have it at 11 a.m. And then next Sunday would be at 9 a.m.
Okay. And again, everyone competing to win our district,
yes,
and then go to Washington, D.C., and the Scripps Spelling Bee, the National Spelling Bee, is televised by ESPN, I believe.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me introduce our spellers. Tim Lambert, WITF's multimedia news director, has participated in this competition for the last few years. Tim took a few days off, and I have a feeling he did that on purpose.
I think he did.
I think he really did. But joining us, we have a couple brand new spellers who are joining us this year. Lisa Wardle is WITF's digital manager. Lisa, you're taking this very seriously. I can tell you have yellow and black on.
I am wearing my bumblebee colors, and I studied half an hour last night. Far less than that kid who spent 10 months working on it, but I am more prepared than I think Tim has ever been.
That could be.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim tells people, and he almost says it kind of proudly, that he's only got one word right over all the years he's done this.
Yeah, I have a background as a copy editor and a writer. Oh. I feel pretty confident.
Ooh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then we have Ed Mahan, who is a PA Post reporter. Ed, if you don't do well in this, I think there's going to be a lot of people disappointed since you write every day.
I would like to lower expectations a little bit.
Oh, you would.
I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful. But I would just like to lower the expectations.
Why do you want to lower the expectations?
It's hard. Spelling Bee, I never did particularly well in grade school. But And I haven't really studied 10 months, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, but, okay, you never did well in grade school, but
that's true.
As an adult, you're writing every day.
Yeah, there's spell check. That's very
all
helpful.
All right, okay. All right. Well, then, Ruth, how about we get into it, and we'll just keep track of who gets what right. And
oh, trust me, I have my little scorepad right here.
All right.
Keep track,
okay.
Yep.
Oh, do you have a bell?
No, I didn't bring the bell.
Bring the bell.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
All right, we're going to start with vocabulary.
And who are you starting with?
We'll start with Ed right here.
Okay.
All right, Ed.
The first word is, what is a nebbish? Either a person from Belgium, a person who resembles a fairy, a timid person, or a young child?
A timid person.
That is correct.
Oh.
You.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this was a hustle. This is a hustle.
So a nebbish.
Nebbish.
Is a timid person.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Okay.
Use that in a sentence on Smart Talk.
I think I will. That is a challenge. All right.
All right, Lisa. What is a Nietzsche? A spy assuming a false identity, a person who has found peace through meditation, a fisherman who uses a trawler to catch fish, or an active participant in the online community?
This is a tough one. It sounds maybe Dutch or German in origin. I'm going to go with the fisherman.
Oh, ding, ding, ding. I'm sorry. I thought this was going to be easy for you. It's an active participant in the online community.
Oh.
What was the word again?
Nietzsche.
Nietzsche.
Work that in today.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Scott.
All right.
Where are geta worn? On the ears, over the face, on the feet, or across the shoulders?
Could I hear that again?
Where are geta worn?
See, this is part of the rules. Can you spell the
vocabulary? It's G-E-T-A, geta.
Okay. And
it's on the ears, on the face, on the feet, or across the shoulders.
Can I ask the origin?
I don't have that information.
No,
this is just
information?
Vocabulary.
Can you phone a friend, maybe?
Scott, I think you're stalling.
Yeah, I am. I am, Lisa, but I better answer pretty quickly, because I have no idea.
I have a hint. It sounded like it might be plural, if that helps at all.
Ooh.
She said, where are geta worn?
Yeah, you don't have to give me a hint, Lisa.
Ed got one.
Okay,
point.
All right, okay, all right,
now.
I understand, but don't be a nebbish.
I think I'm being opposite of nebbish right now.
Okay, I'm going to say the feet.
You are correct.
Yeah, see.
I think it's those wooden looking. I think it might be Japanese.
Yeah.
Or it's got those wooden. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
So what's the score now?
1-1.
1-1.
Yes. So I can mark that down. Okay.
I have to say yours was hard, Lisa.
That was hard.
That was a hard one. Yeah.
Well, and I thought she'd know that, but okay.
Well, okay.
On to spelling. Here we go. Ed, your word is pernicious.
Ooh.
Pernicious is an adjective, highly injurious or destructive, deadly. The doctors finally eradicated the pernicious infection from the patient's lungs. Pernicious.
Pernicious. P-E-R-N-I-C-O-U-S.
Ding, ding, ding. I'm sorry.
Oh.
You left out an I.
I thought so.
C-I-O-U-S.
I thought the I,
then I got lost as I was spelling the words.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Lisa. Your word is picadillo.
Ooh.
Picadillo is a noun. It's a slight offense, a petty fault. The mayor regarded his misuse of campaign money as a common picadillo.
I bet he did.
Hey, I'm not sure he did. I'm going to go with P-I-C-A-D-I-L-L-O.
Ding, ding, ding.
Was there a second C?
But it's P-E-C-C.
Oh.
A-D-I-L-L-O. Picadillo.
Wait, P-E?
P-E-C-C-A.
Wow,
D-I-S.
Scott's looking like he knew that one.
No, I didn't.
All right, Scott, your word is exacerbate.
Oh.
It is a verb. Make more violent or bitter. Intensify the bad qualities of. Name calling will often exacerbate an already violent argument.
All right. E-X-A-S-P-E-R. Don't shake your head. The audience doesn't care.
Okay, Lisa wait. Is shaking her head right now.
Can Hugh take some of those letters back? Can he try again?
No, he can't.
Okay, well, now you made me realize, but I'll go with what I had.
All right.
Was...
Do you remember?
E-X-A-S... Exas... E-R-B-A-T-E, and I know that's wrong.
Yeah, it's E-X-A-C-E-R-B.
Yeah, I knew there was a C in there. Yeah. After I saw Lisa shake her head, I thought there's a C in there, but it was too late.
It is hard not to be able to write them down. I feel like it is hard.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, one thing the students do, the kids do, is
they will do it in the air.
They will do it in the air.
I'm going to try that next time.
Or they'll take their placard and kind of hold it in front and kind of write on the placard with their finger. Yeah, so.
Lisa, that's a good tip. You get a picture of Ed if he does it in the air.
Oh, so yeah. Well, we can do video of that. See? And then if he gets it wrong still, that'll be really embarrassing.
All right, go ahead, Ruth.
All right. Ed, your second word is euphemism. Euphemism. It's a noun, a polite, tactful, or less explicit term used to avoid the direct naming of an unpleasant, painful, or frightening reality. Marjorie referred to her illness with a vague euphemism.
Euphemism.
There you go.
Euphemism. I'm doing it. E U P H Euph E M I S M.
You are correct.
Woo, it worked.
That looks like that helped. Good job. All right, Lisa, your second word is surveillance. Surveillance is a noun, continuous observation of a person or area as to detect developments, movements, or activities. The prisoners of war were kept under strict surveillance.
Okay, I feel pretty good, so I hope I don't screw this up.
All right, here she goes.
Surveillance, S-U-R-V-E-I. L-L-A-N-C-E.
Very good. Good job.
Lisa also did the hand motions.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah. Yes. That may be the key.
I think it is.
All right, Scott, are you ready for your...
Yes, yes.
Zephyr.
Oh, yeah.
Zephyr is a noun. It's a soft, warm breeze from the west. Mm-hmm. The gentle zephyr was not sufficient to keep Renee's kite airborne. Zephyr.
Z-E-P-H-Y-R.
See how simple that was.
Wow. Great. That was good.
You didn't need to write anything in the air. All right. Ed.
Okay.
Soliloquy.
Ooh.
Soliloquy is a noun. It's a discourse made by one in solitude to oneself, or a monologue. At the talent contest, Angelo stepped into the spotlight and recited Hamlet's famous soliloquy that begins, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave I am."
Soliloquy. There's a lot. I know I'm going to get tripped up. S O L I L O soliloquy Q U Y.
Correct.
All right.
Good job. Wow. Nicely done.
That was kind of a guess the last time.
I could tell the look on your face. This is radio, so I have to tell everyone out there that Ed did not look confident with the last few letters, but he knew it off.
The Q, and then the U usually goes with it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Lisa. Your word is gymkhana.
Ooh.
Gymkhana is a noun. It's a horseback riding meet featuring games and novelty contests. Clem practiced daily with his horse so that he could enter several events in the upcoming Gymkhana.
Okay. G-Y-M-K-H-A-N-A.
See how correct. See how simple these
That's
are.
That's impressive.
That was actually from my half hour of studying.
Wow.
Was it really?
That was.
Lisa looked very confident.
What did you study?
There's a website called Spell It, which Merriam-Webster teamed up with the Scripps National Spelling Bee to put together. It's very helpful, actually. Breaks it down by... language of origin, and then you just keep going.
That's what the spellers study is spell it.
Did Tim do that?
No. See, you guys are different.
We're throwing him under the bus right now.
Well, he's expecting to be thrown under the bus because Tim, what he would do is, and Ruth can attest to this, she would say a word and Tim's first reaction would be,
yep.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Scott, your word is rendezvous. Rendezvous is a noun, a meeting at an appointed place and time. The astronauts completed a rendezvous with the orbiting space station.
R-E-N. And the last. Okay. R-E-N-D.
Spell it in the air, Scott. You can do this.
R-E-N-D. E-V-O-U-Z.
Oh.
You're so close.
You were so close. You had that Z in there. Just put it at the wrong spot. R-E-N-D-E-Z-V-O-U-S.
Okay.
Rendezvous.
All right,
yeah.
All right. So no, French, obviously. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Ed, your word is mnemonic.
Ooh.
Mnemonic. Oh. Mnemonic. Either pronunciation.
And by the way, out of here, if there's a word that's mispronounced here, this is not a competition. This is for fun, and Ruth is not the pronouncer, so
I do my best.
I know, and we'll just put that out there. Okay, but
this does have mnemonic or mnemonic. Both of those are correct pronunciations.
Okay.
It's an adjective, assisting or intended to assist memory. Many children use the mnemonic word homes to help them name the Great Lakes. Mnemonic or mnemonic?
Mnemonic. Mnemonic. M. I know it starts with an M. N. E.
Ooh.
M N E.
Mm-hmm. Back that air spelling.
M. Mnemon. O. Mnemon. N. Mnemon. I see.
You got it.
All right.
Good job. Nicely
done. I lose confidence at the end. But.
Well, that MN was impressive.
That's the part that you need to remember. Once you got that, you're good.
Yeah.
I did stumble across that word in like 5 minutes before we went on air.
Are you kidding?
Yes. I showed Ed where I was studying, and then he crammed.
I crammed.
I
remember thinking
of
mnemonic. This is what you
show.
Talk about gerrymandering. This is what
we're
doing.
All right, go ahead. We only have about 2 minutes left, so go ahead.
Okay. This is an easy one, Lisa. Euthanasia. Euthanasia is a noun. It's the act or practice of painlessly putting to death persons suffering from incurable conditions or disease. I don't need to give you. You need to.
Yeah. E-U-T-H. Ooh, is it euthan or euthan?
Ooh.
I think it's youth in. E-U-T-H-E-N. Euthan. A-S-I-A.
Did you? E-U-T-H. What did you say? E-U-T-H?
E-U-T-H. E N.
No, that's where you're wrong. It's an A N.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That was tricky.
All right, Scott. Your last word is cynosure. Cynosure.
Scott looks very confused.
Cynosure is a noun. It's a center of attraction or interest. The student union with its billiard tables, bowling alley, and snack bar is a cynosure for a first-year students during orientation week. Cynosure.
I've never heard that word in my life.
Nope.
Have you?
No.
Ed?
Cynosure.
Cynosure. I don't recall.
A center of attraction or interest. You would be the cynosure of
that's
smart
true.
Talk.
Oh. That's in your job title.
It doesn't help me at all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with S-I-G-N-A-S-U-R-E.
Well, you have the U-R-E, right? I'm sorry. It starts C-Y-N-O-S-U-R-E, cynosure.
Okay. Ooh. See, I was kind of assuming sign as...
Correct. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
All right. So what was the final score?
Oh, well, Ed had the champion with 4.
Wow.
And you and Lisa each had 2.
So do I get to go to the Nationals now?
You can come on Saturday.
How about you can come back next year?
All right. There you defend go. The title.
Okay. Wow.
That's right. Right.
Well, again, this was for fun.
No, it wasn't. We were here to win.
And this is the guy who said he wanted to lower expectations.
I know.
Well, we're out of time, but be sure to tune in Sunday at what time?
6 p.m.
6 p.m. for the Central Pennsylvania Spelling Bee. Ruth Keim, Ed Mahan, and Lisa Wardle, thank you very much for being with us today. Coming up on Monday's show, we're going to talk about that shortage of truck drivers. Also, a study of the Latino population in a community in our area. That's coming up on Monday. Have a good weekend. I'm Scott Lamar.